Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You're with Real Talk with the number one doctor, Ms. Dr. Harris and Dr. Jean Kennedy out of Atlanta, Georgia. We are excited and happy to be with you one more time here in the Golden West Side of Fresno, California. We are just happy to be back on the air again. We have been off the air for about a year or so now. We have been off the air for about a year. And I just felt it was time to come back on the air to be able to talk about some issues, many issues that are going on. I feel that the radio show is an opportunity for those to call in to give their voice in regards to what's going on from their perspective. Many of you know that I am an international civil rights leader. I've been thinking about that international civil rights leader. What does that really mean to me at this point, being on the front lines for 32 years? But before I go into that, I want to acknowledge Dr. Jean Kennedy, who is in Atlanta, Georgia. She is the hey, Mom, how you doing? Need to get you on the line. You call in tonight so we can have a conversation. Dr. Kennedy is the co-founder of Real Talk with the number one doctors. We started this show about 2 years ago. We have birthed many, many shows with different groups who have a cause or a movement that they have started. Probably over 29 international radio shows that we booked me and her birth. We're birthing another show, Emilia Foundation, Brother Charles Taylor, who a colleague of mine, a very well respected man here in Fresno, a community organizer, father, husband, grandfather. And so we're birthing him a father. He's right now in training, learning the board, learning how to do different things on the board so that he could be able to run his own shows. He's have a network which is across the country, even into South Africa. And so it's just good to have him on board again to be able to give a voice to those who may not have a voice. And so for many of you who know me, I do speak truth to power. I'm not one that run away from issues or trouble. I run to it. And so, you know, tonight's show, you know, I didn't want to be on here long. I had a long day at work, and I said, well, I was going to go to the gym and lift weights, and I was just tired. And I said, well, I'll get up probably like 5 o'clock in the morning and go to the gym. But there's a lot of positive things going on. Well, there's a lot of negative things going on. And so we're going to be interviewing. We're going to be interviewing some different folks around the country. I'm going to be interviewing some different people around the country. Hopefully, be bringing some folks to Fresno to introduce you. There's some good folks doing a lot of good work around the world. And so, one of the things that the show tonight. That we're wanted to show tonight that we're having tonight. The topic of the show is what it felt like to be a black in America. I wanted to put black man and black woman on the screen, but you can only type so much. I just put what it felt like to be a black in America. So I'm really saying what it felt like to be a black man or a black woman in America. I think it's important that we define ourselves. I think it's important that we define who we are as a people. I think that we have allowed other people to define who we are. And so I just thought that it'll be a good way on a Thursday, November 2nd, 2017 at 8:08 p.m., to what it feel like, what does it feel like to be a black man or woman in America? I don't think that's too controversial of a topic. I think it's kind of just threw it out there to see who wants to bite on that. It doesn't have to be controversial. You want it to be controversial, it can. If you want it to talk about from your perspective on how you feel, issues you've been going through. And those of you who are listening to the live stream right now, the number that you can call into is 646-668-8132. We have callers right now that's calling up on the line. The number to call in is 646-668-8132. So just a disclaimer, I don't censor anybody on here. Talk freely as you like. We like to get in a dialogue with other folks. If you agree or disagree, I mean, it doesn't matter to me. But we want to get into a dialogue. We want to hear your perspective of what it feels like to be a black man or a black woman in America. I think that's a relevant question right now, dealing with all of the different issues that we have to deal with right now in this society. I think that it's an issue where, you know, we're dealing with police brutality, we're dealing with black on black crime, we're dealing with HIV. We're dealing with STDs. We're dealing with a dysfunctional educational system in America that is to me, that's really making our children more dumber than anything. And that's one reason why I started the Freedom School here, so that we have a different education system to really deal with the grassroots of our children and not just allowing a school system that we don't even know who the teacher is, but they're making big money off our children. So there's a lot of issues that we're dealing with as a people right now. We just want to say welcome to Real Talk with the number one doctors. Myself, Dr. Harris from Fresno, California, and also Dr. Gene Kennedy from Atlanta, Georgia. And so we're going to go ahead. I'm going to open up the lines here. Look like folks are calling in. That number again is 646-668-8132. We're broadcasting out of Fresno, California. We are here in the studio here on the Golden West Side. Tomorrow, just to let everybody know, we will have Dr. D. Dr. D is a new show that we have started, have grandfathered him a show. Dr. D, his name is Mr. Charles Taylor, but his radio name is Dr. D. And again, bear with him. He's learning the board. He's learning fast as he can. And so he has a lot of good topics. And so I really like his perspective, the way he comes with his perspective. He opens it up to each and every one. So then we have another caller at 2670. And so right now I'm going to go ahead to Brother Charles at 1937. Dr. D, are you with us here this evening? Dr. D, Mr. Charles, are you there with us today? Okay, we're going to go to 2670. 2670, are you there with us today?
I'm feeling good. Can you hear me?
Okay, going once, going twice. Maybe they just want to listen, and that is perfectly okay. We'll go ahead and mute them back. I was trying to get Brother Charles here. I don't know what's – he's having some trouble getting online, I guess, or what have you. But so what I'll do is I'll go ahead and talk about what it feels like to be a black man in America. I think from my perspective, history is something I feel that – I wasn't taught as a child, and I'm not blaming my grandmother or my family or anything like that, but I think we spent too much time expecting the public education system to teach us, or to teach me, rather. And basically all I got coming up as a child is, you know, slaves or some chains on their neck, and that was it. But there was more in depth, more deep rooted conversations that, as I got older, to understand about Marcus Garvey, to understand about Nat Turner, to understand about Black Wall Street, to understand, you know, about Emmett Till and the Black Panther Party, and you know, all, you know, Thurgood Marshall and Rosa Parks and all these good people. That I feel that I was, I don't want to use the word robbed, or I just wasn't told. No one told me about all these different movements. And right now, our children, the Freedom School, teach that. About our history. I teach about Black Wall Street. I teach about self-prevention and all of that. So it's important that to be a black man in America, we have to tell the truth about what has happened to our people. And it's important because I believe telling the truth, it teaches character, it teaches self-esteem, it teaches pride. We take ownership of the good, the bad, the ugly. And that's healthy. That's healthy for us. As a black man in America, I see a lot of racism, a lot of racism, you know. And racism just doesn't go from being white to black. Racism can be from black to black. And I see a lot of that also that's going on. You know, to be a black man in America, you know, dealing with credit. And that's, you know, and talking about credit, that is one of the, you know, we're getting ready to have a board retreat here Saturday with my board. And I'm going to be throwing a lot of things at them for us, you know, what we need to teach our babies. Credit, believe it or not, is one of the most, it's almost, well, it's important. Let me just put it like that. Credit is important. But I wasn't taught how important credit was when I was a child. So I don't blame my grandmother or anybody like that. I'm just saying it is what it is. I wasn't taught as a black man how important credit is. I mean, this whole country runs off credit. And if we don't teach our young black males, our young black women, you know, back in the early 80s, people were having babies for money and just to get some food stamps. And but, you know, that male, it came back to hunting because his credit got attacked, his driver license got taken away, you know, your name going collections. I mean, it's a lot of stuff that we have to prepare our children for. You know, and I'm talking about me too. I'm not just talking about all you on Facebook and all you are listening. I'm talking about me too. That's why in a freedom school, I want to make sure that our children are getting financial literacy, you know, within reason at the age of third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, you know, ninth grade, 10th grade. And we're being repetitive. You know, we're teaching them, you know, the importance of credit. Because once you mess up your credit, man, unless you can buy everything with cash, more power to you. But if you can't, I mean, and then not that if you mess up your credit, not having credit is just as almost bad as having bad credit. So there's a process that we have to teach our children. You may not mess up your credit, but you have to know how to build credit. So when you get into the construction industry, you know, bonds and all those type of things are based off credit. So, you know, what does it feel like to be a black man? I don't feel that I was really, at a young age, really equipped with the tools that what I know now and what I can teach my students, I don't feel that I was given that opportunity. You know, talk about jobs. You know, that's a whole other issue, talking about employment, because, you know, it's important that we teach our children how to work and how to be able to have good work ethics. Even in the Freedom School, you know, when we teach the children how to farm, you know, that's work ethic. You know, you have to be there at a certain time. You know, you have to. So it's funny because when we first started out this year, I told everybody, I said, look, you guys have to get here like 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, this is Saturday morning. Everybody's going to school, going to work. And they're looking at me like I'm crazy. Like, what do you mean be here 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning? I said, because if you don't be here at that time, it's going to get hot. They decided that they didn't want to listen to me. They started coming in at 8, 9 o'clock. And trust me, it was hot. But, you know, they had to learn. And there's nothing wrong with people learning. But it was a process. I'm sitting there telling somebody to call into the show. It was a process for them to understand that, you know, if your employer tells you to be there at a certain time, you got to be there at a certain time. You just can't decide that you want to come in when you want to come in. It doesn't work like that. I mean, I have my own construction company. You know, I have to do bids, you know, and I have to be there at a certain time. I expect my workers to be there at a certain time. And so, you know, these are the different morals and steps that we're teaching our children in the Freedom School. I mean, we're an independent school from the regular school system. You know, our children right now, students, I call them children, but our students this year planted bell peppers, watermelons, eggplants. They planted okra. They planted watermelon, yellow, green, purple, orange watermelons. They planted zucchini, squash, pumpkins, Fresno chili peppers, bell peppers, black-eyed peas, purple peas, yellow peas. I mean, they planted all this year. We also taught the children how to make watermelon jelly. They entered that into the fair, and it took first place. I mean, not first, it took third place. We had a sewing class. We taught the children how to sew. They sewed African-American potholders. It took second place. My son, who goes to Central West and grew a chicken, you know, and he put it in the fair, so he took first place. So we took first, second, third this year. Huge, huge. Big deal for our children here in West Fresno. You know, I teach the children how to drive the tractors. I mean, so, you know, we just had a compost class last week. We taught the children how to do compost. Stuffed bell peppers, eggplant pieces. I mean, the children just did a magnificent job this year. I'm so proud of them. We have a couple of students that has 4.0s, 3.5s, 3.0s, you know. This is what we're striving for, is excellence. Excellence. That's what I expect, is excellence. No more excuses, but excellence. That's what I want. That's my standard, excellence. Whatever we got to do to get to excellence, get to excellence, because it will pay off. So, you know, what feel like to be a black man in America? Well, I don't like driving at night. You can call me scary or whatever you want to call me. I do not like to drive at night. I'm literally scared of the police. They're going to pull me over and shoot me. Plain and simple. Because of what is happening across America, we have cops who are trigger happy and, you know, they hide behind the law. You know, I felt threatened for my life, but yet there's no gun, there's no weapon. Police, I mean, and I'm not saying all cops are bad or whatever, but you have a big handful, and the ones that are not bad, you know, that want to come and do the job every day and do it professionally, they're in reservations a lot of times. I'm telling on the bad cops. I mean, you know, it'd be easy if the good cops would just tell on the bad cops, but you know, they're not going to do that. It's, you know, you have a code of silence in the police department. What it feel like to be a black man in America? Well, I live in a community that has a packing house in it. This shit that cooks dead animals. It's operating illegally. You know, the city of Fresno will not shut them down, but at the expense of poor people. Okay, if this plant was in North Fresno, what would part? Trust me, it would not be existing. It would be shut down. But because it's in a poor area, you know, because this area do not have the political pull that most communities have, it's okay. Just let them operate. So the statistic says that living in West Fresno, lifespan is 20 years less than living in North Fresno. In other words, you would die faster here living in West Fresno than you would in North Fresno. Do anybody care about that? Really? I guess not, because the plant is still operating. City of Fresno hasn't said it won't shut them down. So there you are. So good people have to suffer because of the political will that will not stand for them or will not will keep them marginalized forever. You know, we live in a capitalist society now. Capitalist society. The richer is getting richer, and the poor is getting poorer. That's where we are right now here in America. And, you know, you talk about go get an education. I understand all that piece about going to get a BA and an MA and a DA and a DR. But once you get all that, what do you do with it? Are you getting your degrees to build infrastructure in your own community? Or are you just getting a degree to just go get a job? Because basically what you're doing is you're in debt, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 to get a degree or whatever it may cost. But is your degree is to come back and build in your community? That's the question. And I see so many people just get degrees and they just get about their community, move out of their community, move in an upscale community, and then leave our community abandoned. That's what I see happening right now. Nobody wants to stay and fight. Nobody wants to stay and, you know, help move things along, you know. So it's important that we continue. Let me see if I can get Brother Charles on the line here. Brother Charles, are you there? Charles, are you there? Okay, we got a number 1930 1930. Welcome to Real Talk with the number one doctors, Dr. Harris, Dr. Kennedy, out of Atlanta, Georgia. Big Tours 1930. Are you there? 1930.
Oh, right there. Okay, we got a number
1930.
1930.
Are you there? 1930.
This is Sophia.
Hey, how you doing, Mom?
I'm doing okay. I couldn't take it any longer. I had to say something.
Oh,
I
my
couldn't
goodness.
Take it.
This is my, well, she is my mom. I'm going to try to hook you up here so everyone can hear you. We are going Facebook Live. So I just want to give our listening audience just a little disclaimer about Sophia. I'll call her my mom because I have that much respect for her. She traveled with me up and down California, fighting racism and going into different communities. She went with me to Hanford, California. She was my international crisis intervention officer, and she would do all the heavy lifting and all of the phone calls and dealing with the politicians. And I remember this one incident when we went to Hanford. I'll never forget it. And she called, I believe she called one of the city council people, and because Hanford did not want to vote in Dr. Martin Luther King holiday. And so the community called us to go down there. And make the long story short, she gets on the phone with this lady who's been on the city council for about 30 years. That was unbelievable. And so this city council lady, old white lady, she tells Sophia, she says, well, you tell that Reverend Harris if he comes down here to Hanford, California, that he better walk salt. And Sophia turned around and said, well, is that a threat? And no, ain't no threat no more. What are you doing? He said, well, Reverend Harris don't make threats. He make promises. Boy, I tell you, that was some time when we went to Hanford down there. And I just want to thank her for those memories and standing for our people down there. But they voted it in. I mean, we me and Sophia, we put that on a national level of exposing what was going on there. And we just had a time. You remember that, Sophia, when we went to Hanford?
Yes, I do. I thought the Ku Klux was going to meet us with white sheets when we got there.
That was so funny, I tell you, I don't know what to do.
Yes, we had been threatened before we got there.
Yeah, so Sophia has been on the front lines for many, many years. She was telling me stories that she took her children out on marches and demonstrations and protests and different things and educating them about how to stand and different things. And so, I mean, you just don't find mothers doing that no more. I mean, how come mothers don't take their children and teach them how to march and all that stuff?
Yes, when they were
two and three and six years old, they were
on the streets with picket signs.
Wow.
Because of what was happening in our community.
So do you see mothers doing that? Taking time out with their children and teaching them those type of
cards?
People seem to be afraid to acknowledge that the racism and the bigotry and the bias still does exist.
Right.
And I think that's why.
And then a lot of people just don't know.
Everything is so much better. I don't see it as much better, but the ones that have not seen what I've seen and what my parents have seen and grandparents have seen, they don't. They think
everything's good.
And it's not. But I was thinking about what you said about your integrity as a black man or a black woman, and I'm really being challenged today more than ever before. Especially since number 45 has been in office. It seems like my integrity and my self-worth is challenged constantly. I'm constantly being judged by the color of
my skin.
Just recently, I went to a doctor's appointment, and I went to two different
doctor's appointments,
and the doctors that I saw insinuated that I was dirty because of issues that I had. Oh, yeah. I'm telling the Indian doctor that I had allergies. My skin was very itchy, and she told me that I probably had
head bugs
or scabies. And I'm telling her, no, I have allergies. I've had allergies ever since I've been in this valley. And so I know what's wrong with me. And she was insinuating that, you know, you got bed bugs or you got scabies, and you know, that comes from
filth.
I was so irritated that I had to give her a little lesson. I had to talk to her and tell her that I'm not a well-dressed woman that loves to smell good and look good because I'm coming to your office. This is a way of life for me. This is how I was taught to live. And she began to apologize. Oh, no, I didn't mean that. Oh, when you come in, it's like a breath of fresh air. She was really trying to make up for her judgmental attitude towards me. And it was all about the color of my skin because they didn't have
so many
untruths
about us.
I went to another doctor. I had a lump in my breast, and she told me that I
need to bathe.
She really had the nerve to tell me. I let the primary care really have it. I didn't blast her, but I blasted the primary care about it, and she was apologizing for us.
Don't ever send me
to that person again. Or anyone like her. And so she was apologizing and trying to explain why she might have said what she said. But it didn't make me feel any better because it's a lot of that here. And many people seem to not acknowledge that it happened. I don't hear anybody but myself saying that this happened.
You know, I remember one time we doing a protest down at the police department, and I still have this picture of you saying "Who police the police?" What did you actually mean by making that sign by saying "Who police the police?"
Well, I felt like they bear watching because of the stuff that they do, the things that I know that they have done and that they still do. And our assistant police chief is a prime example of that. Have anyone heard any more about what happened to him? I know he went to jail for selling drugs, but you're arresting our young kids. They put the drugs in our community, and then they arrest our kids for selling them after putting them out there. And then you got the assistant police chief selling drugs, too. And so It seems like it's a different set of rules. When you're connected. With the police department. It seems like our black officers, they forget who they are and where they come from when they get there.
Well, can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
You know, out of all the people who stood with me in Fresno, you were one of the ones who stood with me and still stand with me today. For 32, you know, I was counting the amount of years that I've been doing civil rights work. I was under Reverend Al Sharpton, and he was with me. And I believe you were the one who gave me the name when Reverend Sharpton faked on us when coming to Fresno. We spent all that money and time, and people got their hair did, and he didn't show up, and everybody was just frustrated. They said, you know what, we're done with them. And you were the one who came up with the name of National Network in Action. And then you said, in Swahili, it means purpose. That's what you said. And that organization does have a purpose, and that is to stand for justice, equality, and freedom. But it was like you were ahead of your time. You could foresee things that most people you wasn't scared. I mean, I find a lot of people in Fresno just scary. I don't know why, but my grandma said I just ain't got enough sense to be scary. But. But it's like there's a lot of scary people in front of me. They're scared of the chief. They're scared. Then I'm like, well, why are you scared? I mean,
do you remember when the police pulled you over?
Yeah.
Years ago, the police pulled you over. And asked you if you had been in prison. I was on the phone with you when they pulled you over.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it's like people don't believe that stuff happens.
Right.
But it does.
Right. And it's just like, you know, here for 32 years, I was counting how long I've been doing this type of work, 32 years. And I have marched just about on every menu march and protest and holler and scream and vigils. I mean, that's where I first met you at, because it was over in the area off of Jensen and Clara. They call it Dog Pound now, but there was a lady who got shot. I can't remember her name. And you had contacted me, and they were doing a visual over it. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I do. And
that's where we had first met, and then we just bonded ever since. But I wanted to talk about this piece you brought up about Deputy Chief Foster and Dyer and all of this. You know, 32 years ago, I had said that this Fresno Police Department was corrupted. Sometimes God can just give you revelation with people. It just goes over their head. And we both were saying that. Well, you know, we've been considered to be called anti-police. Oh, you can't work with them. Oh, you know, all this other stuff. You know, you went to meetings, you know, down at the Southwest Police Station. And, you know, there are people trying to badmouth me. And, you know, it was just all this stuff that was going
on. I had black men fighting me in that meeting.
Yeah, black men fighting you. But here's what's interesting. 32 years ago, I said this police department, Fresno, was corrupted. Here it is, 32 years later, the FBI comes in and busts a drug ring. So the FBI discovered, what my spirit discovered 32 years ago, down to bust this drug ring that was in our police department, dealing with the highest black police officer, Keith Foster, in the drug ring. And then you have Dyer, who is saying, well, I didn't know he was doing that. Well, how you don't know he's doing it in his office is 5 feet from yours? You're with this guy more than you're with your wife in the bed. I mean,
well,
you have to think about his background.
He has a background of rape and how he became over all of the police organizations for the state of California is just unbelievable coming from a background like that. You know, how did he rise to police chief when he had raped a teenage girl? I believe she was about 14. She was white. She didn't go to court and testify, so I guess that's why he got away with it. He was able to become chief. But it still does not erase the fact that he was accused of that. So I can see why we have a president that can grab women and talk indecent and disrespectful and everything else and still be president.
Isn't that something out of the highest seat of the land, the president's behavior, things he's been saying, how he disrespects women? If Barack Obama would have just did the same as what Trump does,
he never would have been in office.
People would have went ballistic.
If he was doing all that stuff before he was elected, like Trump was, he never would have been elected.
It's just unbelievable. It's such a double standard here in America. You know, it's just a double standard. And, you know, I don't know what to say.
I think it's time to stop protesting and marching. I don't want to protest anymore, and I don't want to march anymore. I want some laws to be changed. I want to see black people mobilize and get people out to vote. If you got to take your car and take them to vote. Somebody else has got to watch their kids, but get them out there to vote. I want to see us mobilize and contact congressmen and everybody, our lawmakers, so that we can get laws changed. I want to see drugs stop coming in my community, and I want to see my young black people stop being blamed for us still reeling from the effects of slavery. I want to see it stop, and I get irritated at the few token black people that have made it, that have risen to the top, that have got their PhDs and their MFs and whatever else it is, BDs and FFs, whatever it is. I want them to stop looking down on black people and remember that not all of you came from families where that was the way that you were going to go, that they had the money to pay for your education. And there's some of them that were fortunate enough to get their education paid for and they made it. But once they make it, they start forgetting about where they came from. And so they're not reaching back. There may be a few, but not many. And so they look. I look at all these black people that are lining up with Trump, and what are they saying? Oh, he's good, and I can't believe these two black women that are always on there saying what a wonderful person he is and a wonderful president he is, and this Paris guy, this black man that's on there always supporting him and standing up for him no matter what he does. Even Trump himself said he could kill somebody and he would still be voted for, and he could get away with it.
So do you
so
think
that tells
white
me that there's something very broken and something very wrong in this country that needs to be addressed. And we need to deal with it, and we're not going to deal with it by marching, we're not going to deal with it by protesting, because we've marched and protested since I was 10 years old and I'm 67. And we're still marching and protesting about the same thing, so I'm done with that. Let's get some laws changed. And let's get our people, mobilized to get
mobilized
to make that happen.
So I want to ask you about your mother and father. They were living in West Fresno, I believe, off a tower in Belgravia. Can you kind of talk about what the environment was when you were a young lady, how the community was? Was it like it is now? Was it a lot of shooting? Was it more self-contained neighbors?
It wasn't like it is now. In 1982, I noticed things began to change. And I saw the drug dealing come in. I saw kids had more access to alcohol. I saw those things coming, so I'm in doubt, but my parents stayed, and it still wasn't really that bad. It was getting bad, but it wasn't really that bad. They were so busy fighting that dog food plant over there that had the air quality so bad you couldn't even open the windows or sit outside and enjoy your yard. They're so busy fighting that they didn't have problems with the young people over there and what they were doing. But see, a lot of people still don't understand that what they're doing, there's cause and effect. I met a young man that told me he came from Los Angeles, and he said, when you see us leaning over in the police cars, they're not our friends, and we're not friendly with them. They're giving us drugs to sell. And I was like, wow. So... I know that that's one way it gets into our community, but I just don't understand why people don't say, hey, our kids don't have access to any way to bring these drugs into the country. How is it making it to our community? How come no one's investigating that? I mean, the police can pull you over and stop you for having a taillight out, but you can't.
But you can't
stop drugs from coming into my community.
Well,
but
you
jail my kids and kill my kids and blame my kids for selling them.
Well, I'll take it a little deeper than that. The United States of America has the most powerful military in the land, and they can go over and destroy an entire country, Saddam Hussein, Bin Laden. I'm not saying they should have did it. I'm not saying they shouldn't have did it. What I'm saying is that America has the resources and the time to go and blow up and tear up other countries. And then in that side of the world, they have trenches and little towns on the ground. Tunnels. The United States of America went down underground and found Saddam Hussein or Bin Laden in a foxhole. In another country. That means they have to travel over the water. Did you mean to tell me that you can't figure out who put drugs in West Fresno? I mean, come on. I mean, I was born at night, but not last night. I don't have many retarded stamped on my forehead, okay? I just didn't get out the Laidlaw trip. What I'm saying is that this is all orchestrated.
Yes.
That the drugs that is in West Fresno, you already see that the police department was part of it. I mean, you remember when drugs, dope, and money was thrown out of the police evidence department. I don't have a key to it. You don't have a key to it. Well, who has a key to the evidence department? Police officers do. They never
found the guns, the
drugs, or the money that was stolen out of the police evidence department. But yet we turn around, we say, okay, you know, we're going to have a block party. We're going to give out bounce houses and hot dogs and pat our children on the head, you know. And then after that, then they just shoot them in the back. I mean, it's so ridiculous, you know, that it's just ridiculous. You know,
well,
it's just sad. It's called population control.
What happened to my daughter almost 4 years ago? That was population control. How does a hospital give you 20 doses of morphine and send you home without being able to monitor your heart and knowing that you're diabetic, that you diabetics cannot release their urine, so they have to go in and have the fluid pulled off of them, and the only way that morphine comes out of your body is through your urine, and you give somebody 20 doses of morphine and send them home, they're going to die. So it's a lot of systematic population control that's going on. And
right.
Our people are dying,
right.
because of it.
Right, right. And that's one reason why at the Freedom School we're teaching our children how to grow their own food, how to can their own food. We talk to children how to make watermelon jelly. We talk to children how to make stuffed bell peppers. We talk to children how to sew. We talk to children how to make relish from the green tomatoes from the farm. Teaching the children how to cook okra. I mean, all that stuff is what our ancestors, your mother, they lived longer than we're living today because they didn't eat all the processed food. You know, they had their little backyard gardens and chickens and all that they raised.
Even before the food is processed, the food has all kinds of chemicals on it. They wash all the wax, the natural wax off of apples, and then they put a wax on apples that is not good for your body. That's harmful to the body.
Right. And it's like I told somebody the other day, I said, we'll go to a grocery store and we'll buy a carton of eggs. We'll buy stuff like we don't really know where it comes from. You know, we just throw our stuff in the basket. We don't even know where it comes from. You know?
And you have to read them the labels. I don't even buy salt from the store anymore. I buy sea salt, and I buy kosher sea salt that comes from the Himalayan mountains because the regular salt in the grocery store, they tell us that we're eating fried foods and things like that that cause our bodies to have cholesterol, when the fact is that we have cholesterol because this salt is cut with sand that we buy. That Morton salt that we buy in the store is cut with sand. And when we put it on our food and we eat it, it cuts our arteries and blood vessels. Then the body has to make cholesterol to heal up those cuts in the arteries and blood vessels. So therefore, we have an abundance of cholesterol. But that's not what we're told. And we're told different. So that manufacturers, corporate America can keep making money off of what we consume.
Right. That's so true. So let me ask you this. We were talking about today what it felt like to be a black man or woman in America. Now, you came through the 1960s, right?
Right.
What was that environment during that time for his Black Pride? It was James Brown saying, you know, I'm Black. What did he say? I'm Black. And I'm
well, James Brown
proud.
Came on the scene. He came on the scene with I'm Black and I'm Proud in the 70s. I believe it was
72
when he came on the scene with that. But in the 60s, when I was like 13, the Black Panther Party started in the area where I lived at. It started in Oakland, and I lived in Palo Alto, which was about a 30-minute drive from Oakland, just across the bridge. And so it was a very different. It was more people had more pride about who they were, and we understood what the Panther Party was doing. We understood. I understood as a 13-year-old that when there's no breakfast at home, you can't concentrate and you can't study. Because all you're thinking about is that I'm going to get to eat when it's lunchtime. And then I'll get the main meal when I get home. A lot of Black families didn't have that breakfast, that important meal of the day. Breakfast is so important to have in the morning. But a lot of Black people didn't have it. So the Panther Party, they started, they had rented a little house there and fixed it up, and they were doing fundraisers to get money to buy breakfast, and they would feed the children in the community that were going to school. They would feed them breakfast. They understood that too. And contrary to what white people teach about who the Panthers were, they were not thugs. They were UC Berkeley students. And so that's kind of the era that I came up in, watching the Panther Party feed the children and watching them stand up for themselves. The police were stopping them on the streets, making them lay down in the middle of the street. And they were still doing the same thing. My son was 18 years old. He's 41 today. Right here in Fresno, the police was stopping him when he got off work. He's heard of Kentucky Fried Chicken up there on C Street. Stopping him, asking him where he's going. He's got flour all on him and smelling like chicken. And they're stopping him, asking him where he's going. That's the same thing that the Panther Party was, the young people that were in the Panther Party were fighting about back then. And the women stood with them. The young women stood with them. They weren't standing by themselves. And I believe in 72, the majority of the party was women.
Wow.
So there's a difference.
The EOC program that they have right now came from the Black Panther Party, the breakfast program.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And
yet,
so, but at that time, they came after the school children had been fed and left. They came and shot up the place where they were feeding the kids and said they were revolutionists that were against the American government.
So, have you heard during that time of any of the police who assassinated or was working with the U.S. government to eliminate the Black Panther Party? Did any of those police officers come on trial?
Now, you know what? I haven't heard of any of them coming on trial, but I don't want to be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure that J. Edgar Hoover had something to do with trying to eliminate the Panther Party.
Right.
And
this man
had a problem with gay folks, and I don't know why, because he had a reputation of being gay himself. These are the kind of people that we've had running the country.
Right.
I know folks miss Obama. I know folks is missing Obama. I know it's some white people missing Obama.
They said Obama was the worst thing that ever could hit the face of the earth, that Obama was bad president. He didn't do enough. They say he didn't do enough for black people, but this president ain't doing nothing for black people.
Obama was very smart. The things that he put in place, he knew he had to put in order to help us, he had to help everybody.
Yeah.
So the things that he put in place that did help us, that didn't only help us, it helped white people too.
Right.
That's why I said that there's some white people that miss him as well.
Wow. Well, you know, I just felt like, you know, what it felt like to be a black man or a black woman in America. I just think that we have a lot of social issues. Just look at the black church right now. I mean, they're even segregated. You know, pastors don't talk to one another. Pastors jealous of one another. Can't come together around issues. Now, we can come together around some chicken and watermelon and pass of appreciation. But your son gets shot or killed, a lot of them is going to tell you to do just pray about it.
They're not going to come and stand with you because they don't know what to do, but they're not trying to find out what to do either.
Well, the three things I found out about pastors are, one, either they just really scary, or number two, they done sold out, or number three, they have a criminal record, or it's 2 out of 3, or 3 out of 3, or 1 out of 3. But I mean, you've been in ministry for a long, long time. I know you've seen a lot that has went on in the community, and from a young girl all the way up to where you are now. And the preacher is just not visible in the community anymore. I mean, it used to be a time where you could, you know, see him, touch him, feel him. You know, something happened, they're there. I mean, right now is. I mean, I have other pastors sending their members over to me to my church so I can help them with their problems. So I don't know. We do what we can. But anyway, Ma, we're going to go ahead and sign out. We're having a retreat this weekend with the Freedom School students. Hopefully this coming spring we can get you to come over and talk to the babies and encourage them. They're going to be taking all the students to Fresno State tomorrow so that they can tour the campus to get that exposure of college. We're going to have the African-American ambassador students giving us a tour. And then I'm going to take all of them to Chuck E. Cheese so they could play with the games and stuff. And just trying to show my appreciation to them for their hard work.
And maybe in the future, make some plans to take them to some of the black colleges so that they can see.
Matter of fact, we just took them to Allensworth 2 weeks ago.
It was the first time
going to Allensworth, but you're right. We have some tours set up to take them to some black colleges, and as well as going to Oakland, because Oakland has some black bookstores and some different things, you know, still historic down in Oakland and San Francisco. And so we just want to, you know, just you know, empower our children, you know, give them the tools they need to be successful, encourage them, be there with them, pray with them, cry with them, laugh with them. And, you know, we need healthy black families. healthy. Like, you know,
right.
Man, we gotta start eating right. Can't keep eating chitlins and stuff.
Right. Well, I'm gonna get off, but next time I come on, I'll give you my take on what's going on with the pastors.
Okay. All right. And we're gonna have a date on that. All right. We're gonna go ahead and sign off with Bob Marley. One love. One love. Bob Marley says one love.
Thank you.